I'm Rainey Aronson, executive producer of the PBS investigative series Frontline, and you're listening to the Frontline Dispatch. This time, Boomtown.
The Frontline Dispatch is made possible by the Abrams Foundation Journalism Initiative, committed to excellence.
The Frontline Dispatch is made possible by the Abrams Foundation, committed to excellence in journalism, and by the Frontline Journalism Fund, with major support from John and Joanne Hagler.
Support for Frontline Dispatch comes from the Massachusetts General Hospital Cancer Center, dedicated to providing the latest therapies and cancer specialists who are experienced in your cancer. When you hear the word cancer, their team is ready. Learn more at massgeneral.org/cancer.
We went 2 weeks of constant earthquakes, just rumbling, 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 rumbling.
We counted 19 earthquakes in about 34 minutes. But over and over and over, it makes you want to move out of your town.
To say that Cushing, Oklahoma is an oil town is putting it mildly. Even though it's small, only about 8,000 people live there, its giant tank farms store millions of barrels of oil. So much oil that the Department of Homeland Security says if anything were to happen there, it would have a debilitating effect on national security. But since 2009, something has been happening there. There's been a dramatic rise in earthquakes, earthquakes linked to the oil industry. Sandy Tolan has the story. He's a reporter who's covered energy and natural resources for years. He went to Cushing to find out how these quakes impact a town that's literally built on oil. Here's Sandy.
The first place I went in Cushing was the town's biggest attraction and its economic lifeblood.
Well, I'm looking down. It's about, I don't know how far down. I see my reflection down there in a little pool of oil.
I climbed on top of a giant oil storage tank and called down into it.
Hello.
Up here, the view is just tank after shiny white tank. I came to Cushing because of the quakes. Actually, because of one big quake. But that comes later.
Ladies and gentlemen, he can hear you right about now. Make some noise.
When I got to Cushing, there was a rodeo in town.
Father, we just come before you, Lord, in the name of Jesus Christ. And Father, lift these guys up right now, Lord.
Wandering around, I met a guy in a white cowboy hat and jeans. Rodeo hand by night, oil field supervisor by day.
My name's Pat O'Kelly. I was born here in Cushing. I've lived here all my life. I'm 54. I can't imagine living anywhere else besides here. This is home. It's almost like a Norman Rockwell deal, you know. You just know everybody.
He said, like him.
Most of the people in Cushing are somehow making money off of oil.
Lionel Harris Oil Company sponsoring the bareback riding. We had a couple of guys not make it tonight.
Oil was first discovered in Cushing in 1912. Before then, Cushing wasn't much more than a pit stop on the Eastern Oklahoma Railroad. But oil brought thousands of newcomers into the town. Cushing was Big Sky, bronc riding, the oil patch. And every once in a while, there'd be a little earthquake, maybe one or two a year. Then everything changed. Jeremy Boak, the state's top geologist, tells the story in numbers.
Well, historically, Oklahoma's experienced about one or two earthquakes of magnitude greater than 3.0, one or two per year. Then starting in 2009, that went up to 10, 15, 20 per year, and 60 and 100. And then in 2014, it was 579. 2015, it was 903.
That might sound pretty shocking, but for the most part, the quakes were fairly small. And even though there was evidence it could be related to the oil industry, most people just chalked it up to living in an oil town.
My name is Sue Trotter.
Sue is the mother of this year's rodeo queen.
A lot of people don't want to say that the oil companies are causing the earthquake. That's the way they make their money. I mean, this is a lifestyle around here. Nobody wants to point a finger, but they want to know why. Why does it keep happening? And people are getting where they're used to it, and that's not right. I don't think we should ever get used to an earthquake. That's not right.
Before, getting used to them meant dealing with tremors, things falling off the walls, the unsettling rumbling of the ground. But then came November 6th, 2016.
The exact true story is I was in my bathroom in my underwear.
And all of a sudden it sounded like a bomb went off. It just, everything shook, the barn shook.
The cracking and the roar and the thunder and the shaking.
And things started falling off the wall, pictures did, and off shelves.
The noise came with a freakish roar. Maybe it was the wave of the earth coming this way. And that earthquake shook our building like a rag doll. We could see the walls moving from side to side.
When I said, I believe this one here is the real deal.
It was just, wow, wow, that was an earthquake. I mean, that shook our world.
Cushing police say there is significant damage in downtown Cushing after a magnitude 5.0 earthquake hit just west of town at 7:44 this evening.
The downtown Lions Club building collapsed. Roofs caved in. The Red Cross set up an emergency shelter.
Right now I'm on Broadway Street where we can see most of the damage that occurred.
The Oklahoma Insurance Department estimated that more than 170 buildings were damaged.
Some of the biggest damage can be seen at the Cimarron Tower behind me. This is a senior assisted living facility. All of the people living there had to be evacuated.
The ground around the oil tanks shook, but the tanks held. So much police tape went up around the downtown, it looked like a crime scene. No one was killed or badly hurt. But this woman, who didn't want to give her name, lost almost everything.
Well, my options really at that point, because I could not get any financing to repair the home, was to walk away from it.
And for you, what sort of damages did, in monetary terms, did you suffer?
So I've lost my home and my credit that I had worked my whole life to establish.
Suddenly, it was harder to see the earthquakes as just the price of doing business. David Reed is the publisher of the local newspaper. He says he'd been fine riding out the smaller quakes because
the oil industry is so important to our state and to this community that if these small tremors is the price we have to pay to keep those guys profitable and growing, we'll pay that, and we'll gladly pay that because there's no serious damage done, and that's okay. We're very, very supportive of our friends in the energy industry, and we want them to make obscene amounts of money.
But the big one crossed a line.
If you run your car into the corner of my building and you do $100,000 damage to my building, and I go out there and say, hey, dude, what'd you run into my building for? And you refuse to pay for it, you and I are going to have a little problem for a while.
David Reed and his wife, Myra, live and work out of a two-story brick building that was seriously damaged in the quake.
And this crack is one you can stick your finger through, and there's even cracks significant enough that you can see the light outside, and that goes all the way up the building. I think we got an enormous punch in the gut, and it doubled us over, and the community is not over that yet, and our downtown area may not get over it. It was very, very serious.
Some people wondered, what if the next one was even bigger? A bigger one had the potential to harm the oil infrastructure in Cushing, possibly even create an environmental disaster. Now, you might be thinking this all has to do with fracking, and fracking has been linked to a small number of man-made earthquakes in Oklahoma. But there's a different culprit here in Cushing and across the state. Tim Baker explained it to me.
I'm the director of the Oil and Gas Conservation Division, the Oklahoma Corporation Commission.
The State Corporation Commission is set up to be a regulator of Oklahoma industry, and so they're charged with looking out for the public while also facilitating the needs of the companies. And when the quake started, they investigated whether a type of oil production that was more and more popular across Oklahoma might be related to the dramatic increase in quakes.
Well, horizontal drilling has changed the ball game in Oklahoma.
The time-tested way of drilling for oil is to go straight down into the ground. But horizontal drilling means the rigs go down and out.
often as much as a mile or two in all four directions.
Picture a stack of pancakes, but now if you can go horizontally in one of those pancakes, one of those layers, you can get that same layer much longer than you can if you cut through it vertically.
Reaching that much further gets you much more oil, but there is a problem. Something else comes with all that crude.
Large quantities of water. And when you produce that oil, you're going to get this prehistoric ocean water with it.
In central Oklahoma, millions of years ago, ocean water became trapped deep in the ground with the oil. And now when you drill, that water rushes out. So much more of it than in conventional vertical drilling. On average, about 20 barrels for every barrel of oil. And that water is so salty, you can't just dump it on the ground or it'll kill all the vegetation. So across Oklahoma, the oil companies teamed up with wastewater disposal operators. Basically, companies that pumped that super salty water back into the ground, into a big spongy layer of rock called the Arbuckle Formation.
It looked like a marriage made in heaven.
Pumping it into the Arbuckle was a pretty cheap and easy solution, but...
what no one thought about or no one envisioned was the Arbuckle, being the deepest formation in Oklahoma, sits right on top of what we call the basement rock, the Earth's crust.
The basement rock? That's where the fault lines are. Weighing them down is one way earthquakes are created. This science isn't new. Actually, quakes were linked to injection of fluids as far back as the 1960s. In recent years, as scientists began to look again, the connection seemed even stronger. But despite all that evidence, it took a while for many oil companies to admit that their activities might actually have something to do with the quakes.
My name is Kim Hadfield. I'm president of Crawley Petroleum. We're a privately held company here in Oklahoma that operates over 500 wells across Oklahoma and the Texas Panhandle.
Hadfield had seen a lot of the evidence, but says his fellow executives in the oil and gas industry had doubts about what should be done about it. There are about 1,000 disposal wells in the Arbuckle, and he says, how do you prove just which well is causing which quake?
It's like you went into a football field and there's a row of switches. You want to turn on the lights. So you throw a switch, nothing happens. You throw another switch, nothing happens. You start fiddling with the switches, and all of a sudden, a light comes on, and then it goes off. And the question is, was that the switch I just flipped, or was that one of the other switches? Is it a combination of switches? That's kind of what we're working with.
Hatfield says that's partly why it took a while for them to come around to the need for restrictions.
People like to point and say, well, gee whiz, you had the first seismic event. You should have known something was wrong. You should have done something immediately. But you have to realize the time interval between the increase in injection and the increase in seismicity was over a couple of years. You know, we say a couple of years like it's a long time. It may seem like a long time to us, but geologically, that's not even a blink.
But as all these discussions were happening, the number of earthquakes was skyrocketing, causing some to worry that the state was acting too slowly. In early 2016, before the big quake in Cushing, but almost 7 years after the spike in earthquakes began, state regulators limited the amount of wastewater disposal allowed in the Arbuckle. Here's Tim Baker again.
From almost, it was just shy of 3 million barrels a day.
New restrictions kept it to about 2 million barrels a day.
And now we're down to about 1.4 million barrels a day. But we did see a decline in earthquake activity.
After 903 earthquakes of 3.0 magnitude or higher in 2015, the number dropped to 623 last year. And it's down more so far in 2017. And after the big quake in Cushing, state regulators went even further. Among other things, they shut down all the Arbuckle disposal wells within 6 miles of the epicenter. It's going to take some time for the restrictions to work, but nobody knows just how long. And in the meantime, there are still quakes. So I wanted to know, how do they arrive at the 2 million barrel limit? I called Matt Skinner, spokesperson for the Oklahoma Corporation Commission, And Skinner told me that while they were glad the number of quakes was going down, quote, nobody knows what the safe level of wastewater disposal is. In other words, 2 million barrels a day may be more like an educated guess. But David Reed, he's the newspaper man, said that even though there were fewer quakes and more restrictions, the wastewater disposal operators should still pay a price for what had happened. He'd heard that in neighboring towns, people were suing for quake-related damages. Reed said he felt like he needed to sue as well.
This community might take this punch in the gut and not do anything. I mean, there were a lot of people hurt financially and emotionally, and I couldn't stand that.
But it wasn't so easy for his wife, Myra.
I wasn't totally with David at first, because we're just not the type of people to jump in and sue. But if they cause this damage, then they need to pay for it.
So the Reeds and two other Cushing residents filed a class action lawsuit against the five wastewater disposal companies whose operations were closest to the epicenter of the Cushing quake. Not everyone in town was thrilled about the lawsuit. Some people didn't want it to look like they were going after oil companies. But David Reed says,
it happened to a lot of my friends, very close friends, acquaintances, readers whom I feel a responsibility to, and they're refusing to do anything about it. So then you settle it in a court of law.
The lawsuit asks for money to cover the property damages caused by the quake, but it also calls for punitive damages for the, quote, wanton disregard of the wastewater operators who, the suit claims, knew the danger of what they were doing. The defendants dispute this, saying they aren't legally responsible for any damages from the quake. Tensions in the town have been high, but David Reed says to him, it's pretty simple.
That's what we're doing. As far as I'm concerned, there's not anything emotional about it.
But few things shake up a community more than suing your neighbors. I reached out to the five companies named in the Cushing suit, but none of them returned my calls. Except Rick Arberg. Rick's the CEO of a small wastewater disposal company. Actually, it's a side business. Most of the time, he runs a livestock feed mill. But he's the only one being sued who lives in Cushing.
Known these people my whole life, and they are bringing the suit, and they're following the advice of attorney instead of a 40-year relationship. And so it does cut a little deep.
Rick leans back in his office chair in jeans and a knit polo shirt. He doesn't want to talk about the specifics of the lawsuit because, well, his company's getting sued. He acknowledges that there seems to be a connection between wastewater disposal and the quakes, but he also says,
yes, the oil and gas industry was out in this area when a lot of these quakes were going on, but it could have been a coincidence.
Rick says he feels singled out. And as the only defendant in Cushing, he tells me that in Rotary Club meetings, prayer groups, encounters on the street, it's awkward.
Yeah, it's a very difficult situation. It's heartbreaking because a lot of times we're this small community, you may be lifelong friends, and yet you have this division.
But it's more than that. It's anger. When you talk about the oil industry, you're talking about the livelihoods of so many people in Cushing. So suing for damages can feel like somebody's trying to take money out of the pockets of you and everyone around you. That feeling is no further away than David Reed's own son.
Corey Reed, we're at Bad Brad's Barbecue in Stillwater, Oklahoma.
Corey was furious about the lawsuit.
Every single cent of my company relies on crude oil in one way or another. If crude oil goes down, you feel it in your bottom line that next day.
Corey says he was blindsided by his parents' decision to sue.
The first time I heard was on Thanksgiving, I guess it was last year, and I was mad, but I was mad because they didn't even tell me they were going to do it. They just did it without my knowledge. As family, you should at least give your son that's in crude oil field a heads up so he can prepare his strategy for what may come.
Do you feel like your parents are biting the hand that feeds?
You're biting the hand that feeds you because you're in town of Cushing, pipeline crossroads of the world, and you're a newspaper salesman. So you sell ads, And the ads are to help these businesses in this town that's run off of crude oil. Basically run, the one town in the whole country that is absolutely run off crude oil. And you're going to go against them now. I mean, that doesn't sound very smart.
Eventually the Reeds made up. Now they see each other most days. But David Reed gets that for most people, the suit is about money. He says he understands it all too well.
We brought this lawsuit in November. There were many thousands of dollars worth of advertising that we had sold before and couldn't sell directly because of our involvement in this lawsuit. I personally was the one that called on several of these clients, and they told me, I can't run an ad in there. If I do, one of the defendants will withhold contracts from me.
Despite the family frictions and the lost profits, the Reeds have kept at the lawsuit, even though they know it could take years. Pat O'Kelly, the oil field supervisor I met at the rodeo who said Cushing is like a Norman Rockwell town, he said he understands why people were rattled.
It sounded like a bomb going off.
But the O'Kelly family is part of the oil industry, and Pat's wife Stacy says they'd never sue an industry that's always been there for them.
Boy, I wish we could file a lawsuit too and win big bucks and pay off our house and do things like that. But when you really look at the long-term effects of it, I mean, 10 years down the road after this is all said and done and you don't have anybody drilling around you and you don't have all this work around you, then what? Okay, so where's that lawsuit money?
Pat says anyway, he's not that worried about the quakes.
Since I became a Christian, I spend the rest of my life waiting to see God. So why, if an earthquake takes me out or whatever takes me out, that's what I've been working for anyway. So earthquake doesn't scare me.
But they scare plenty of other folks, especially looking forward. Even with the current restrictions, some worry about one key detail. It's this. Wastewater disposal companies have complied with a 2 million barrel a day restriction while the price of oil has been low, so there's a lot less money in drilling anyway. But there's concern that once the price of oil goes up, so will drilling, and the oil industry will pressure the regulators into letting them inject just a little more water into the Arbuckle. Oklahoma, after all, is a state where an oil well sits in front of the state capitol building, and the name Halliburton is emblazoned inside the capitol's ring of honor.
Oklahoma, in my opinion, is definitely run by the energy industry.
Johnson Bridgewater, he's the director of the Oklahoma chapter of the Sierra Club, says there's a long history of the state bowing to the interests of oil.
Rather than work to minimize the impact on citizens, they've worked to minimize the impact on businesses.
I asked regulator Tim Baker about this.
I mean, the commission's role historically, in large part, is to facilitate the economic engine of Oklahoma, which is largely oil and gas, right? I mean, does that put the commission at times in a compromising position when you have such economic pressure that we know about to continue to develop the oil fields?
I don't believe so, in my own opinion. I'm just going to speak as the director of oil and gas. We try to follow the science, and where the science leads us, that's how we have acted upon our directives, and that's what industry has wanted us to do.
Why not just shut these disposal wells going into the Arbuckle down, and then you don't have to monitor so closely because there is no injection?
Well, at that point, we would be not allowing an operator to conduct his business. They have their right for their day in court.
But you're describing a process in which you react after a quake, right? And what if the quake is really bad and then you act afterwards? Everybody will be pointing fingers saying you should have acted sooner.
Well, no one knows what the future is going to hold. Most of the data that's been collected in Oklahoma, no one has seen before on this scale. We are watching it closely, and if more action is necessary, we're ready and willing to do that.
In his cramped office in Oklahoma City, Kim Hatfield, the oil man and president of Crawley Oil, said it quite plainly.
If you shut down injection into the Arbuckle, the oil industry in Oklahoma would come to a halt, and not within a matter of weeks or months, but within literally a matter of minutes, because of being unable to deal with salt water.
Among other things, Hatfield reminds me, oil and gas is responsible for a quarter of all tax receipts in the state, and those could all go away.
New York Times reporter asked me, you know, what would happen if we just outlawed injection? And I said, well, it would make the Grapes of Wrath look like a happy movie.
The journalism behind the Frontline Dispatch is possible thanks to the support of you, our listeners. Join us in supporting journalism that holds our leaders accountable and pursues the truth, wherever it may lead, by making a gift at frontline.org/dispatch. Thank you.
So what's next? The Cushing lawsuit, along with a few others in other parts of Oklahoma, is still unresolved. In May, the oil companies moved for the lawsuit to be dismissed, arguing there wasn't sufficient evidence. But that motion was denied, and so the case goes on, though no one expects it to be resolved anytime soon. Rick Arberg, the defendant you heard from earlier, says tensions in the town are still high, but he's hopeful the community will move on.
There's been a lot of jobs and a lot of money brought to Cushing through the oil industry, and will continue to be. It's livelihoods for families, and so, you know, I'm sure in my heart this will pass, and once it does pass and we have resolution on it, the healing will take place quickly and we'll all move forward together and try to build our community back.
But with so much devastation and division, not everybody in Cushing is feeling that same sense of community spirit. Like the woman you heard from earlier, who lost her house, credit, everything. She says it's been really tough, and she hasn't had a whole lot of support.
One of the things that I've sensed from people, you know, this community comes together to help each other and rallies around, and, you know, when people are in need, you know, their neighbors come and help. And, I mean, did you find that that was the case in your situation?
No. Not really.
In the meantime, though, there are still earthquakes.
And I had this idea that I was going to be the Packers announcer.
Oh.
One morning in July, while doing my reporting, I was invited on a local morning radio show. I'd interviewed one of the hosts a few days earlier, and afterwards she'd asked if I'd be willing to come on and talk about my career as a journalist. We were chatting.
But anyway, then I went on to... Oh, no, that...
Hey, we just had an earthquake.
That, sir, is an earthquake.
That's an earthquake.
Okay.
Now, we haven't had very many of those.
This was 8 months after the November 6th quake.
So we just got shook.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Now, I understand from talking to people that there is a little parlor game that kind of would go on, and people would Facebook each other and stuff and say, well, what do you think that was, a 2.7?
Mm-hmm. I would say that could have been a 4.
You think that could have
been? I
don't
think it was that.
You don't think Earth? No.
Actually, the quake registered as a 4.2. Turns out, Guess the Magnitude was a game people were still playing in Cushing. And they played it again a few weeks later, and then again with a cluster of small quakes in September. I asked Daniel McNamara, he's a geologist from the U.S. Geological Survey, what he thought the future looked like for Cushing.
People in Oklahoma should be prepared for strong shaking.
Oklahomans, he says?
They need to think like Californians.
McNamara says even if all the saltwater disposal stopped today, there would still be earthquakes.
For many years.
Seismologists say that if the wastewater disposal stays at its current levels, the quakes should continue to decrease. Some think it'll take 5 or 10 years. Others say it'll be much longer. But Oklahoma is still at risk for a major earthquake. In other words, no matter what anyone does, no matter what laws are passed or restrictions implemented.
There's potential for a magnitude 6 to 6.5, no problem.
A 6.0 earthquake would be 10 times more intense than the 5.0 quake that devastated downtown Cushing last November. It may never come, but it also may be too late to stop it. Some people say this is a reason to start getting off oil for good. Valerie Branion is one of the lead plaintiffs in the Cushing lawsuit, but she's looking past the quakes and the lawyers.
I mean, we can't give away our town to oil. I mean, I think some people would have at first thought that was an option, that we just give away the town.
Branion is a Cushing native. Her dad worked in the oil industry. But she thinks Cushing has to begin reimagining itself, as hard as that might be.
We're going to be needing another industry here before too long. There's no way around it. If they were to locate a manufacturing plant in Cushing, that would have an enormous impact on our whole state. Currently, it's all about oil billionaires.
She's even got a site picked out.
This is a perfect spot. You can see so many of the tanks. And when you look out there and you think about all that oil, and you wonder who's going to be buying it in 2040. Our cars, our vehicles, are they going to be using oil then?
But in Cushing, that day feels a long way off. Before I left Cushing, David Reed, the newspaper man who's bringing the lawsuit, asked me if I'd like to get a view of the town from above.
We're taxiing to active 18 Cushing. We're on taxiway Alpha.
David flies a 1968 Cessna.
Okay, we're ready to go. Off we go, full power.
At 1,000 feet, we look down. Just north, downtown Cushing stretches out. Beyond it, the winding Cimarron River, oil derricks and saltwater disposal wells. And the dominant feature of the terrain, miles of oil storage tanks.
It looks almost like checkers on a checkerboard. We have some tanks here that'll hold 625,000 barrels of oil. You can play football inside of it. Probably about 100 million barrels of oil storage capacity, real close to that.
In a day or so, I'll get on another plane and, powered by oil, fly back to my life in California. But David Reed will still be here, running his paper and fighting his lawsuit. He tells me that sure, the lawsuit caused rifts in town, but what if that's the least of their problems? What if the big one wasn't really the big one?
We have a 7.0, this building's done, and downtown Cushing is done. It's no longer a punch in the gut, it's a bullet to the head.
For the Frontline Dispatch, I'm Sandy Tolan.
Sandy, thanks for your reporting. We wanted to catch up with you. So since you've been there, which was just in July, tell me, what's the latest in the town?
Well, the town hasn't stopped shaking. I mean, since I left Rainy in mid-July, there have been 7 earthquakes of 3.0 magnitude or more.
So, I mean, would you characterize people as being worried about another big one? What's the feeling in the town about what could happen?
It depends on who you talk to. I mean, some people feel that the measures that the regulators in Oklahoma have taken are going to be enough to settle things down so they can go about their business and resume their lives, in a sense, and start rebuilding the homes that were damaged. But other people point to research that says there could be big quakes after a lot of these saltwater disposal wells were shut down. They just don't know if they're going to be safe. It's not just the locals who are concerned about the future. It's the U.S. government. Homeland Security is concerned about the tank farms in Cushing because so much of the American economy literally flows through the town. So there's a concern that what Homeland Security calls critical infrastructure could be vulnerable. With a big quake, there could be a catastrophic failure. And Homeland Security meets every month with the Safety Alliance of Cushing, and in October, they're running a preparedness drill. They want to be ready.
Sandy, thanks again for your great reporting out of Cushing, Oklahoma.
Thank you, Rainey.
This story was reported by Sandy Tolan, with research and reporting help from Sarah Terry Kobo of the Journal Record. Additional help from Joe Wirtz of State Impact Oklahoma. For Frontline, this story was produced by Jamie York and Sophie McKibben. Sophie is our podcast series producer, Jamie York is our senior producer, and our creative director and senior editor is Jay Allison. Jay also does our audio mixing. For PBS's Frontline, Andrew Metz is our managing editor, and Amy Gaines is our associate producer. Thanks to series story editor Lauren Azell Kinlaw, Arun Roth, and our special counsel, Dale Cohen. Thanks also to Vicki Merrick and Atlantic Public Media in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. Music in this episode comes from Stellwagen Symphonette. The Frontline Dispatch is produced in WGBH's studios in Boston and powered by PRX. I'm Rainey Aronson, executive producer of the PBS investigative series Frontline, and I hope you'll keep listening to the Frontline Dispatch. If you want more stories like this one, subscribe at our website, pbs.org/frontlinedispatch, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Frontline Dispatch is made possible by the Abrams Foundation Journalism Initiative, committed to excellence.